Stop handwriting food prep labels and food temperature logs. ITD Food Safety automates your food labeling, grab and go, food temperature logs, and even remote temperature monitoring for your freezers and coolers. Stop by booth 3419 to get a demo and start automating your food safety plan today.
Have you ever wanted to know how is that done on board, or who's really behind the various initiatives that take place within the bars and restaurants at sea? Or how do trends in hospitality really impact the F&B experiences that are fantastic and that guests enjoy while cruising? Then Eat Drink Cruise is your podcast. Sustainability, unique and distinct experiences, reshaping beverage consumption, culinary innovation, supply and demand in today's commercial world, and the people that make all of this happen is actually what our Eat, Drink, Cruise podcast aims to cover. In 2024, the outlook for cruising expects to see over 35 million guests on board, which is a 12% increase year on year, according to Cruise Lines International Association. And so this podcast really becomes a sneak peek behind the scenes of a dynamic industry, whether you're a cruise expat or a successful supplier or newcomer supplier or just an F&B fanatic. Bite-sized conversations are what this podcast are all about. My name is Ken Taylor, and welcome to the show. We have a great lineup of different players throughout the business, including operators and consultants and influencers. It's a holistic perspective on the status of cruise F&B today. With us today, we have Zach Sulks. You might be missing out if you don't know Zach. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much, Ken. Appreciate it for having me.
You bet. Zach joins us really having spent, is it 24 years?
That would age me a little bit, Ken, but over 20. Definitely over 20.
Over 20. So Zach joins us with over 20 years in the industry. A lot of years with one particular brand that most people probably know you from, and that's Bacardi. You spent 14 or so years with Bacardi.
Oh yeah, 14 years at Bacardi, currently now 2.5 years at Carnival, and previous to Bacardi, 6 years at Norwegian Cruise Line. So been around the block a bit.
Yeah, you've got a couple cruise lines behind you as an operator, which is a big plus. Not everybody in the industry has that. It's interesting when you think you've been at two major cruise lines, you really have a unique perspective, and we'll talk about that. But you're AVP of Beverage Operations for Carnival, and a lot of people don't know other parts of your background. I understand not only do you have an MBA from University of Miami.
I do. Yes, I do.
You're a former math teacher.
I started my life after college as a high school and middle school math teacher. That's correct. Yes. And I'm an assistant athletic director. I didn't tell you that before. I used to coach women's varsity soccer and men's varsity baseball.
Awesome. Are you involved in any at the cruise line? Do you guys have a sports team that you...
I focus on beverage.
Just focus on beverage. Well, so you live in Coral Gables, right? Are you one of those bikers?
I am not.
Large groups?
No, they are large groups of bikers, but yes, I see them all the time. I am not one of them.
No. Going down Old Cutler, yeah. So you live in... Don't the executives all live in Coral Gables? So you're like one of those types.
There are quite a few. I'm not one of those types exactly. I've been here about 8.5 years. But yes, Gables is a very nice place to live. And no, I'm not one of the bikers. And a quick plug for my gym. I do it at F45. It's 45 minutes of high impact fitness, and went there this morning. So good exercise.
Do you work out every day?
Try to do about 4 to 5 days a week.
Yeah. That's awesome. Especially to just survive in Miami, you've got to do that. But more importantly, in a job like yours, managing beverage for 26 cruise ships. Is it 26 or?
26 today, yeah. 27 after Freedom's Day comes out in April.
So you and I talked at the F&B at Sea show last year. So that was our first year. We were on stage. There's a lot of senior operators there, which is great. Of course, the supplier response to last year's show was amazing. And I'd have to just put a big shout out to all the suppliers who contribute to this show, and it's a great networking event. I'd be remiss not to mention this year's F&B at Sea will be at the Man of Wynwood Convention Center, and that is April 10th and 11th. There is a big awards program as well, so we're really excited. If you haven't been informed or are aware of, there will be a first ever awards program presented by Sea Trade and the F&B at Sea show on the 11th. So really, it's kind of like two shows in one. I even think there's going to be transportation between the Miami Convention Center and the Man of Wynwood one.
But details on that, go online. We'll give you that information. Are you aware of the awards program?
Very much, yeah, very much. And you know, just a quick plug, I'm happy and elated to see FMB at Sea and its evolution. It's been a long time coming. Sea Trade's always been a great show, but it's been a long time coming that we actually focus on possibly the most important part of the cruise experience, definitely from a net promoter score perspective, is food and beverage. More guests have a positive experience or, unfortunately, sometimes a negative experience due to food and beverage when they're on board. Entertainment is big, obviously. Casinos big, et cetera, but food and beverage really drives everything. So it's great to see Sea Trade expanding into that area.
Yeah, I mean, when you walk on a cruise ship alone, I mean, just the offerings nowadays really takes F&B to a whole new level. You don't have to be too passionate about it, but for those who are, it becomes, you know, incredibly immersive and fun. And for yourself, I mean, so you're the global beverage leader for Carnival Cruise Line. So you're the guy that oversees all of the beverage activity. I mean, hashtag choose fun, right? So hashtag choose fun, the global leader of hashtag choose fun, what does he choose for a cocktail? I mean, when you go home and you relax, what is the global leader of hashtag choose fun choose to relax with?
I specifically choose anything that tastes good. However, more specifically, I love a rum old fashioned as well as a mezcal Negroni. That would be my go-to.
Do you make all your own cocktails? You make cocktails for your wife?
I do. Yeah, I make my own and for her and for her friends.
For her friends? So you don't bring over one of the bartenders from the ships?
No. It's too hard to get them all off customs, immigration, all that stuff. So.
What's your favorite restaurant in Miami? I have to ask you also because I'm heading there shortly.
Oh, wow. I think it depends on the location because Miami is not that close together. I mean, South Beach is far, depending where you live, Brickell's, close or not close. I'd say Coat, Korean barbecue place.
I'll say Korean barbecue keeps coming up. Yeah. I am loving Korean barbecue right now.
It is very
good. So it's Coat?
Yep.
I hadn't heard of that one.
Coate. Is how you spell it.
So the one thing I wanted to talk to you about is just the environment because I was reading a couple of different articles. The pressure on the cruise industry continues with the focus on the environment. And I will have to say, having been with the industry for many years myself and knowing the industry, it sometimes gets a bad rap. You know, when you think about the volume of product and people on at sea and, notwithstanding there's a 28,000 square foot or acre park in the center of Florida that probably has some pressure on them too as well, right? Whether it's a hotel industry or any part of the industry, the pressure is on. But for the cruise industry, I think it's time for the food and beverage team to step up. And I think, looking at some of the initiatives, what is Carnival doing to sort of step up in the whole sort of approach to the environment?
I'll get to beverage in a second, but Carnival as a corporation, not just a cruise line, has some hefty goals on the sustainability side, but as it applies to food and beverage on the food side, there are quite significant food waste reduction goals that were set against 2019 that were, in my mind, we will clearly achieve them. We've already achieved our interim goals to get there, but I think food waste is a big one for not just Carnival, but every cruise line in the industry.
Sure.
And on the beverage side, what we're doing, and it's public knowledge, is we have a partnership right now with Eco Spirits, which is around circular packaging. And the goal being to rid the universe and the earth, and then, as it applies to the cruise lines, but of single-use glass as it applies to the spirit industry. Right now, for instance, Bacardi Superior is our number one moving spirit on board. We probably use that bottle for about 15, 20 minutes on a busy embarkation day, and then it gets thrown away. So you think about the carbon footprint, transportation, the outer shippers, the inner shippers from a cardboard perspective, everything else that goes into all of that, and we use it for 15 minutes. So partnership with them on trying to work better to reduce our carbon emissions, and it's one Bacardi bottle at a time today, but we've had some really good results so far with a pilot we've been doing on three ships, where, we've reduced our usage around 30,000 Bacardi bottles are out of use, if you will. So, and using some circular packaging technology from Eco Spirits in partnership with Bacardi and Carnival, it's been a very fruitful endeavor. Just in terms of our engagement with sustainability.
When you're talking crews, a lot of people get, you know, kind of interested in the numbers, right? So 30,000, what does that mean? 30,000 bottles. That's since
we started that in late July. Yep. And it's a pilot July. On three ships and about half the bars on their ships. So it's.
And that's only three ships. So, you know, that is just a tremendous amount. And it just takes the pressure off of what you have to do with those bottles on board when they are going, you know, down to the incinerator.
Correct. I mean, we already have a great recycling program on every right. ship. So, you know, it's not necessarily the backside of that that we're talking about. It's really all the front side of the production of those bottles, the shipping of those bottles to Bacardi, the labeling of them, you know, sure. them putting them in the boxes and everything else. So it's really all that aspect up until it gets to the ship. After we mm-hmm. use them, we recycle, which is great. But still, there's just that massive upfront use of carbon and everything else that we're trying to reduce.
And it's unique and a unique approach. I mean, clearly everyone's aware that, you know, keg beer usually goes on board as a keg and then gets reused.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You guys reuse your keg. Some cruise lines are doing the one-way keg, which also has some advantages to it. But the effort is there. And I think that story is really a unique one to tell. So I'm hoping you guys tell that story when you start to expand it. You'll probably expand it part of it this year.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be expanding probably in the next month to 2 months. But yeah, you mentioned kegs, and that's how I explain it to the layman. We get a keg, a small 4.5 liter keg of rum delivered to the ship. We use it and offload it, and back it goes to Eco Spirits and their relationship with Bacardi. They clean it, they refill it, they send it back to the ship. So it's really, again, it's not quite that simple, but for the layman's terms, it's really a small keg of rum that just keeps going back and forth between us and Eco Spirits and gets refilled, we use it, gets refilled, we reuse it, et cetera. So as a way to not use the bottles and throw them away.
What was the effort on the public health side? Because USPH usually...
USPH has actually been very supportive, which we were surprised at. We thought that would be a bigger challenge. Very supportive because the measures we have in place of how we offload them, because once they're offloaded and they go to Eco Spirits plant, they had to clear everything with actually the USDA at that point, because they're a shoreside endeavor, to make sure that they're cleaning them and getting them sanitized in the right endeavor. So they've been very supportive throughout the process.
Awesome. That's really cool. Yeah, getting that story out will be good, I think, for the industry and hopefully pass on to some of the other cruise lines. All right, let's talk about like Excel for a moment. This is right now, I think actually just got announced couple of days ago that you have a fourth Excel ship coming out.
Correct. Yep. Fourth Excel.
That was just announced.
Yep. I think it was 2 days ago.
And
got announced. Yeah.
That joins the fleet of what? So you have Mardi Gras, Celebration,
and Jubilee.
And Jubilee.
Correct. Yep.
And Jubilee's 6,400 passenger cruise ship.
The whole Excel class ship is around the same. Yeah, they're all around 64.
Yeah, or they're all the same. Which is, I mean, I actually didn't know that they were that big. And the reason why I mention it is because I think, well, Royal Caribbean's Oasis class is about 6,400 max capacity.
Yeah.
And you've got several of those. And it really is a trend to go on these some of these really big ships. And so fourth one's coming out. Breweries are on them. So certain standards you have where you have like certain things on these ships. You have a brewery on every ship or on this class?
We have a brewery on every Excel class ship and every Vista class ship. So Vista class started, I think Vista launched in 2017. Sorry, off the top of my head. But yeah, since then, every new ship that we build, purposely build, we have a brewery on board. So making our own beer, every ship has its own brewer. We have a brewmaster leading that program. So the guests on board those ships have beer that's as fresh as you're going to find anywhere in the world. It comes directly. Yeah. Go ahead.
You partnered with BrewHub on that.
So we partnered with BrewHub only for the beer for the ships that don't have breweries. So the goal being, if you're on a brewery ship and you order Beach Lager, if you're on a non-brewery ship, you can also order Beach Lager. And that is made by BrewHub up in Lakeland, Florida, with the specs that we gave them from our ships. So they take the same recipe, they replicate it and mass produce it so they can put it on the other ships that don't have breweries.
And these beers were presented at the Great American Beer Festival.
Yeah, 2019, we won Best Porter for our smoked porter. This is still made on board today. Yeah.
I've talked to someone who loved the IPA. So you have an IPA, you have a wheat.
Oh, yeah, Wisco's IPA, Caribbean wheat. Yeah, our core is around four on board the ships. And then we allow the brewers to have fun as their desires go. As you know, if you think about, if you go to any small craft brewery in the U.S. and they yeah, they make some standard stuff, but they're always playing around and making unique items. You know, if it's Christmas time, they're making something that tastes more like Christmas. And then Oktoberfest, they have an Oktoberfest beer. And they're always playing with flavors, and whether it's mango-infused wheat beer, you know, they're always doing fun stuff.
I haven't seen the – so where is the brewery on board? Is it part of the venue or is it –
Yeah, yeah.
Is it
in on a Vista Class ship, we have a partnership with Guy Fieri. So it's on Deck 8, the Brewhouse Smokehouse. So the smokehouse is all Guy's recipes from a food perspective, and then the brewery's tied into the same location. On Excel Class, it is also part of that concept, but just at a different location on the ship.
So when we were talking earlier, you had mentioned, you know, your perspective, which is really unique because, as I mentioned earlier as well, the operator typically knows the brand, knows the industry really well in general. But having spent so much time with Bacardi, also your stint with NCL, gives you a unique insight of what all of the cruise lines kind of generally think or how they're kind of, you know, approaching the industry from a food and beverage standpoint. How does that help you with Carnival? I mean, I'm sure it helps you in ways, but give me a few thoughts as to where it helps lead you.
Yeah, I think that what Carnival has done great for 50 plus years now is be relatively consistent on brand, whether it started as the fun ships or today to hashtag choose fun. They and now me as part of that team, I continue to drive that consistency and brand execution. However, I think some of my past experiences, and when I look back, I think I've been on 100 different cruise ships in my life, whether that's Carnival or NCL or Royal Caribbean, Celebrity, Holland America, Princess, Aida, Costa, Carnival UK, Carnival Australia, and seeing so many different operations and so many different ways of working, whether it's wine lists or cocktail programs, et cetera, and just understanding how everybody does it different brings a little bit of uniqueness to how I approach what we're doing, because we still want to stay within that consistency of delivering the brand proposition. But there are always better ways of working and better ways of doing things, even overlaying that with that brand proposition. So it gives me a little bit of a unique exterior commentary on things. You know, I just had a meeting earlier today with somebody, and I used the comment that I still use 2.5 years into my job here, is that I'm still new to Carnival. And I do feel that way because Carnival has been around for 50 plus years, and I still learn things every day. And the ability to bring in new, unique concepts of and ideas of ways to handle what we do and how we do it has been very beneficial.
So when you're making decisions, and you've talked about this, your sort of first filter is what's best for Carnival. What are those checkboxes that you go through when you make a decision? Because, I mean, you're operators across the industry, like any industry, but really you're faced with a lot of decisions that impact, you know, a large number of employees, a huge amount of revenue, and the impact that F&B has just in the whole operation and the guest experience. Obviously, revenue is going to be a checkbox for you, but what's that process you go through when you think about decision-making for Carnival?
I believe and have believed for quite some time that the guest / consumers / customer, whatever you want to call them, comes first. I used to think that when I was at Bacardi and I was calling on the cruise lines. Cruise lines came first in that conversation, and today it's our guests that come on board. So they always come first from staying on brand and giving them that fun experience that they expect to have when they come on board. That is definitely first and foremost. They're the ones who choose to come back. They're the ones who pay for our drinks. They're the ones who recommend us to their friends, etc. So the guest is definitely always top of mind. Of course, revenue. 1,000 times. Yeah, I mean, we are a business, right? We're a public traded company. We are here to make money, but we can't do that without guest satisfaction. So yeah, revenue is massively important. And then I think we talked about it before, you and I, but you know, having that math teacher background that I used to be back in the day definitely provides me with a lot of fact-based decision-making with the concept always overlying, is it good for Carnival? So even if it means I need to give away some drinks to this program, that's okay as long as that program is going to yield more money for Carnival. Perfect example of how that comes to life is on our Vista class ships over the past 3 to 4 years, you know, let's take COVID out of it and the pause, but over the 3 to 4 years, we've taken out the guest facing bar from the casino. And we've been doing that on some of our older Spirit class ships as well. And the reason for that is we can replace that space with casino slot machines and tables that will yield a much higher return than a guest-facing bar. I had to expand the pantry a little bit and do some different things from a service bar perspective to make sure we could still produce the number of drinks we needed to produce. But it's a realization and a conversation back and forth that whilst we all love to go to a bar and sit down, if I can still deliver the drinks in a way that is meaningful for the guests and don't need that space to do it, well, let's give up that space to figuring out a way that's good for Carnival, where Carnival can actually deliver better guest expectation and a better revenue for the shareholder. So that's what I mean by that, where if it's good for Carnival and we look at it from a fact-based decision-making process, then it's good for beverage operations.
Yeah, and it's having connection with the guest, right? And their desire for the experience. And so that point is actually a really interesting one because, you know, guests typically probably don't sit at a bar in a casino too often. There's a lot of noise. There's not a lot of opportunity for a particular vibe that would promote sitting at the bar. And so, yeah, moving it to a service bar makes probably a lot of sense. There are other bars, plenty of them, where people are having great experiences. Like I know on Excel Class, you have a standard there where several bars are determined or created to be unique and different to that ship. And I imagine you're doing that even with this fourth ship, now that obviously you've been working on it. It's been recently announced, this fourth Excel ship. But tell me about that. So each ship gets a different bar experience.
Yeah, correct. So, you know, Carnival has some very standardized programming across the fleet, whether it's the Red Frog Rum Bar, the Blue Iguana Tequila Bar, Piano Bar, Alchemy Bar, Punchliner, our nightclub, sometimes called Liquid or something else, and you can see those on all the ships.
Right.
And where we've taken a little bit different approach on the Excel class of ships is to create some unique bar experiences only for that ship. So not even for the class, but only for that ship. So when Mardi Gras first launched, it had a dedicated area to New Orleans. And it's not called that exactly. And how we brought it to life is there's a fortune teller bar there, for instance. And that bar was created with the concept of the cocktails are very mystique led and more focused on what you would find, not necessarily on Bourbon Street, but off Bourbon Street and some of the, you know, I don't want to say the seedier parts of town in New Orleans, but places you'd really find some very unique cocktails that lead into the mysterious aspects of things that happen in New Orleans, whether it's, you know, graveyard tours and things like that. And we've kept that same approach on celebrations, same thing, with some very unique bars that are tied into the marketing concepts and the guest experiences that we want on that ship, and then that followed through the Jubilee as well. So Jubilee, you know, the latest example, one of the bars is called Dr. Ink. Obviously, if you put that together, it's drink. And it's focused around undersea and the creatures that you find there. And the leader of that bar is an octopus. So everything we did at that bar, we tried to create cocktail experiences that tied into things you would find undersea from an organic perspective. You know, whether they're starfish or, you know, silly things. We're using Swedish fish as garnishes and then in infused vodkas. We're using different kinds of squid ink in certain cocktails. We're using different types of seaweed in cocktails. So trying to, you know, tie in to the guest experience is really driving what we do from those new bars.
And when you're putting this together, like, I realize that there's the design piece to it, right? From a shipboard architecture standpoint, here's the space. It probably starts out as a white space or an area that's been determined as a bar. But how do you then go to the development, like, what's your process? Do you have a team that does that, or you have like an ideation team that does that? Or
our in-house product development team, together with our, if it's a new build, with our new build team, really bring that space to life from a space perspective. Then we have internal conversations. I mean, I have a very small team of four. I am one of four that works shoreside beverage operations. We are teeny when you look at it that way, in terms of the amount of revenue and the size, how many ships we have to oversee. But it's us, you know, we work together. The four of us work together closely with that product development team to figure out what it means, from cocktails to cocktail names to menu development, uniforms, you know, everything that you would see from a guest perspective, what the back bar is going to look like, what brands are going to put on the back bar or not. And then working also with the new build team on just that, you know, are there changes we can make to the bar that make it more effective operationally, but also really look good and deliver the guest experience? Because like you said, that space has already been whiteboarded as a space for a bar. And then we start early days on little aspects that are going to help deliver the guest experience.
So as a former kind of math teacher background or an MBA, super smart guy, obviously you like the numbers part. Beverage is probably the funnest numbers game to play. I mean, you drop a zero in revenue, it's a huge deal.
Yes.
Not every hospitality group can say that. Or if you add a zero on cost, that's another meeting or two you're going to have to go into.
Yeah.
But between, you know, managing the business and creating these concepts, are you down the middle? Do you like to spend more time with one or the other?
I would be remiss if I said I'm happy that XL4 is a few years away to give us some time to rest. Since I started during the restart, I started during ship number 4 being restart out of, at the time that the fleet was 24 ships. So it's been fast and furious for the past two and a half years, you know, restarting ships, launching a ship, restarting ships, launching a ship, restarting ships, launching a ship. So I'm pleased. And I'm honestly, you know, not necessarily for the revenue aspect, cause that's going to slow down. The revenue growth will slow down without new ships coming, but to give us some time to breathe, because it's really been, it's unfortunately been all at the same time, developing, managing, you know, hiring, firing, you know, all aspects of what beverage operations is and being an operator. But it'll be nice to have a little bit of time to take a breath, stabilize what we're doing, work on efficiencies, and not necessarily on the cost side, as just efficiencies overall, how we do things at bar, what do we batch, what do we don't batch, you know, how can we make things better from a beer perspective, you know, all kinds of things that need some attention that we just haven't had the time to because it's just running, you know, to get new things up and running all the time.
Right. So I guess refining and innovating, you have a little more time now to do that. When you think about some of the things that you want to do, like whether it be a trend that you think is something you should look at or just something you want to do, maybe you have time to do that now or a little more time than you otherwise would. Is there something that you've been looking at that you can tell us that you kind of want to think about or look at?
Yeah, and it's not going to sound sexy at all. It's honestly spending more time on our onboard teams. They've done a great job. Our revenue is up, like everybody's is up from a beverage perspective, you know, many, many, many percent. Obviously, tell you the numbers, we are a public company, but it's been extremely, extremely great growth. And that's really due to the teams on board. And we put a lot of pressure on them over the past, you know, couple years to perform, and we haven't had the time to dedicate back to them. We all do bar training all the time. You know, everybody, every cruise line, every operator that runs every bar does some type of bar training here and there. But it's really looking more at them from a wellness perspective and how we support them better, you know, and training them on guest interaction, not just on the brand and how to make a drink. That's the easy stuff. Guest interaction, how you handle the sales process, how you address guests. You know, if you have extra time, make sure you're putting water down for them. Just all the little things that help make the experience better for the guest. But then on the back end, all the little things that help our team members become better people. Because I think we all, as a cruise industry, don't spend enough time focusing on how we treat our team members. We do. We want to treat them well. Crew welfare is a big part of what we do. But from a formalized process of you're really diving into how can we support them better to address the needs and the challenges they face.
And that's such a great opportunity across all of the cruise lines. I mean, the talent you're dealing with today, the raw talent, is a force that's probably not been seen in a long time just because of the way the industry came back and the willingness and awareness of available employees around the world who are stepping up at this point to join the industry. And a lot of times that means less experience, right? Less skill, and less exposure to the things you're talking about from a guest handling skill set or just bringing a personality out on in front of the customer on board, how to do that, right? It's a big deal.
Yeah,
it's absolutely a big deal. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Zach. I really appreciate the time to chat with you. I hope everyone's enjoyed the conversation. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, Ken. Thanks to C-Trade, and I'll see everybody at FNBNC. I will definitely be there.
All right, well, we'll see you either April 10th or 11th. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good. Take care.
Stop handwriting food prep labels and food temperature logs. ITD Food Safety automates your food labeling, grab and go, food temperature logs, and even remote temperature monitoring for your freezers and coolers. Stop by booth 3419 to get a demo and start automating your food safety plan today.